Propagating truth in a world of lies. You are listening to the John Age Project.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
Thanks for joining us today on The Anomic Age. I'm your host, John Age. Got a great show for you today. We're going to be speaking with Joshua Abraham in just a bit. Before we get into that, we'll get into a little news. And as always, before we get into any of that, I implore you, check out AnomicAge.com if you haven't already done so. It's a nice little website, I must say. All things me, all things our guests, all things communication-wise, if you want to communicate via just a regular message, if you want to get a hold of us on Twitter or on Facebook, you can find those links there as well. So, please, AnomicAge.com. For all your listening and viewing needs. Depending on what platform you're viewing this on, you could be unaware, but we have a lot of videos. We have a video for each and every broadcast. So, if you have not checked out our video section, you're missing out. You're not missing out too much. If you're just listening to this with the audio, you're already ahead of the game. So I thank you and congratulate you for at least checking out AnomicAge.com. But there's so much more. You could be watching this. I like it if you're listening to this at the gym or in the car or on the daily commute or perhaps just at night to, I won't say wind down because this isn't the show to wind down upon, but just to glean a little bit more information. Thank you. Thank you very much if you're listening to this broadcast. There's only one more thing you should do. Share that. Share the link. Share the love. Share the Anomic Age. Also, you can visit the sort of lower right-hand side of AnomicAge.com, and you can donate. Hit the donate button. It'll take you to a PayPal link, and you can very easily make a small or very large donation to AnomicAge.com. If you are so inclined, you can do it directly, paypal.me/AnomicAge. You can do that too. So either way you'd like to do it, please do so. Also, the newsletter, or basically just signing up via our email newsletter, which, to be honest, isn't out yet. But in these great times of censorship, I really, really ask everyone to just go ahead and sign up for the newsletter, because you never know. You never know where this platform might go, and assuredly the social media might go. This platform, AnomicAge.com, should stay where it is. We hope. But you never know. I'm sure the folks at No More Fake News thought that too. So we should be fine, but you never know. So please, click on down at the lower right there and sign up for the newsletter. So at the very least, as things approach 2020, if all else fails, we'll send a bunch of email announcements out and just basically say, hey, we got a new show coming out. We'll just send you some sort of Dropbox link or some sort of direct RSS feed link. I'm not sure how things will work out with the ever-escalating internet censorship. You never know, but hope for the best, prepare for the worst. That's kind of how I like to do things around here. So let's get into a little news, shall we? There's ever so much news to talk about out there. Most of it not good. This was from Breitbart.com. Amazon removes Danish filmmaker's Islam documentary. And if that sounds familiar to you, it should, because we just spoke with this gentleman on our last episode, Mr. Michael Hansen. If you remember him, I'm hoping that you do, and you hopefully remember him discussing his great documentary, Killing Europe. So a documentary by independent filmmaker Michael Hansen about mass migration and Islam in Europe, entitled Killing Europe, has been removed by Amazon from its Prime Video service. Amazon cited quality assurance, quote-unquote, concerns, despite the fact that the documentary has been hosted on the platform since 2017 without issue. So we don't really have to belabor this point. We know what's going on. It's Amazon. So they are quite obviously censoring all things conservative, all things right of Mao, right of Stalin, right of Pol Pot. You know, keep on going down the line, fill in the blank. That's what Amazon is doing. Not a surprise. This should draw the ire of everyone with a pulse in America that even enjoys some semblance of a First Amendment or believes that we should in any way control our own destiny and be able to watch and listen to what we like. I always say, for each of these articles that I cover, there should be millions of people in the street of every U.S. city demanding their rights back, and not violently, but vigorously, telling the quote-unquote powers that be that they're unhappy with this. That's where this one's coming from. What's up with this? The Western Journal. Democrats enraged. Enraged, are we? That Trump wants to make food stamp recipients show they actually need them. Well, that is enraging. I mean, we should just hand out everything for free, right? This is by Dan Calabresi, July 24th, 2019. The headline you've been seeing for the past day or so is that Trump wants to kick 3.1 million people off food stamps. This is predictably portrayed as cruel and heartless. I don't think it's a pretty good idea, but hey, I guess I'm cruel and heartless. For some reason, my state continually elects Debbie Stabenow to the United States Senate. I apologize on behalf of all 9 million of us. And she is always good for a quote that completely misrepresents reality. Let's just skip on down to the meat of the matter, shall we? Under current rules, if you receive certain state benefit programs, you're automatically qualified for food stamps from the federal government as well. There is no process to test your eligibility. So the bottom line is here, I'm not even going to read the rest of it to you. You can read the rest if you want. It's a good article. I'm just giving you the broad strokes because we don't have like a two-hour news segment. I wouldn't mind a two-hour news segment. I think we could pull off an easy two-hour news segment every single day of the week. But I'll rein myself in a bit. So the bottom line is that Trump actually just wants to hold people accountable. He wants to do the inverse of what they just discussed here. He wants to actually vet people that are receiving food stamps, EBT cards, whatever they term this as now. It's preposterous. It's preposterous that there's as many people on these programs as there is. It's preposterous that there's seemingly no vetting process for this bollocks. The whole thing's preposterous to me. It should be a fail-safe mechanism in the horrible event that you are temporarily in need of some minimal assistance. Minimal. I didn't say you can go out and buy the new Jordans. I didn't say you can go out and buy a bunch of weed. I didn't say you can go out and buy a bunch of booze. I said minimal. So if you're on food stamps, EBTs, whatever silly benefits that you want to throw under that bus, that basically means you should be able to go out and buy food and water and things of that nature that you need. That's it. I'm sorry to tell you that I don't believe that should entail booze, that should entail weed, that should entail a whole lot of other things. And I know, I realize somebody's saying, well, it doesn't include all these things. I know, I feel you. But as you know, there's ways around that. There's a lot of people abusing that system where they're getting something and they're taking it back and using that money to buy the aforementioned things. Heck, most of the folks in the Communist Party just want you to be able to get all those things. So, yes, are people tricking the system and using these funds for that? Sure. And I realize there's a large percentage of the population that says, well, you know, if you're on food stamps, maybe you should have a glass of wine, and maybe you should be able to buy a medical marijuana and all this, that, and the other. Sure. I get you. I feel you. That's just not how I feel. But the good news is we can feel however we want. I'd just like to see some vetting involved. I would like to see a whole lot less, millions and millions less on these programs, and millions less abusing the system. That's kind of where I'm at on the whole deal. It's a nice fail-safe mechanism. It shouldn't be we're on this for the rest of our lives. It should just be that, hey, we're on this for a short period of time till we can get our stuff together. End of story. Let's move on. This is coming from PatriotRising.com. New high school textbook describes Trump as mentally ill and supporters as racist. July 23rd, 2019. Many advanced placement students across the fruited plain will be using an American history textbook that depicts President Trump as mentally ill and his supporters as racist. The textbook published by Pearson Education is titled By the People, A History of the United States. It was first exposed by radio host Alex Clark in 2018. Here's just a glimpse at the mainstream media coverage back in 2018. So it was on Fox News, CBS News, National Review, and so forth and so on. The Federalist. The final section of the book, titled The Angry Election of 2016, is especially critical of the United States president. Quote unquote, most thought that Trump was too extreme a candidate to win the nomination, but his extremism, his anti-establishment rhetoric, and some said his not too hidden racism connected with a significant number of primary voters. Oh my. The author goes on to describe the president's supporters as mostly older, often rural or sub. Sorry, I'll try to maintain suburban and overwhelmingly white. Well, that's just terrible. Clinton supporters, quote unquote, feared that the election has been determined by people who were afraid of a rapidly developing ethnic diversity of the country. Discomfort with their candidate's gender and nostalgia for an earlier time in the nation's history, the textbook reads. You mean a time when we weren't inundated by complete and abject scum? You mean that? Is that what you mean, Pearson? Education? Anyway, I'll stop there. I think you know where this is going. Let's move on. We go again. July 24th, 2019, from CBS News. Fallen officer's memorial covered up and taken down because it mentioned Islam? No. Buddha? No. Well, what? Well, it mentioned God, you racist. Come on. A memorial marker honoring fallen police officers in Tega K, South Carolina, recently stirred a huge controversy because it mentioned God. Then God was removed, kicking off another fight. I can't believe anyone fought. The memorial stone was erected at the local police station on July 12th, but city officials modified it to cover up all mentions of God. After offended residents flooded their office with complaints. Bravo to these folks. Now they've completely taken it down. Well, if you want to know, to borrow a quote here, if you want to know who's in control, just look at who you can't discuss, right? Well, you can't discuss God, so who must be in control? The Satanists, the Luciferians, the Communists? This is from Infowars.com. Adam Salazar. I'll reel it in. WTF? Question mark. Feminist strips naked in front of children at art display, July 25th, 2019. Whoa, that's... Oh boy, it's hard for me to keep it clean when it's so revolting, disgusting, nauseating, and otherwise sickening. If you look at this article, you know what I'm talking about. Good grief, this is gross. A feminist art exhibit sparked outrage after photos surfaced of the installation's artist undressing in full view of children. Yeah, they should be upset, because ordinarily that would be a pedophile. That would be someone who's exposing themselves to children. And if any creepy old man did this anywhere in America, that person should be immediately arrested, taken to trial, put on the pedophile watch list, the whole nine yards, because that person will be a disturbed piece of human dung. So why wasn't it done to this monstrosity? I don't know. In a photo of the exhibit circulating on social media, European artist Mare Tralia is seen removing a robe as four young children stand nearby. Good grief, that is disturbing. I feel sorry for those children and disgusted that anyone would take their children to such a pathetic excuse for art. What you're also seeing on the table next to this ugly, monstrous person is they've got female genitalia and breast. I guess these are some sort of silicone or rubber portrayals of breast and female genitalia there on the table in full view of the children also. And then you've got this grotesque, obese, god-awful individual disrobing. Good night, nurse. This is just sick. Oh boy, last one of the day, NewYorkPost.com. Larry. I'm sorry, my mind is just... Larry Cleona from the New York Post, FBI agent, brother to cop, accused of murder-for-hire plot, dead by suicide, sources say. So this is the brother of a New York City police officer that's in jail right now, accused of hiring a hitman. And this brother got a phone call from that sister, who is incarcerated in New York, got a phone call while he was at an Austin, Texas bar. And after that phone call, he immediately shoots himself. So the connection here is that this FBI agent was connected to investigating quite a bit of the Clinton mishaps. By mishaps, I mean criminality going on. So he was in charge of that. So quite clearly, this seems like a blackmail thing to me. To me, again, I'm not speaking any facts that I have in front of me, but to me, it seems like they incarcerated the sister and were going to blackmail and probably put her on the chopping block, either in prison or otherwise. So she called the brother, sort of revealing what's going on, and he probably had some pretty interesting information on the Clinton crime family. So he was... He just killed himself, I suppose. I mean, there was numerous witnesses in this bar that said just that occurred. It wasn't any sort of foul play. He actually did kill himself in this bar. But you have to sort of ask yourself, why? What was the connection to the Clintons? What was the connection to the sister? What was the connection indeed? We will perhaps never know. Sad, sad ordeal. It's pathetic. Nonetheless, let's move on to our guest. We'll be joined in just a mere matter of moments by our guest, Joshua Abraham. So please, hold on to your hats and stick around. There's much more to come. See you in a second. It is my distinct pleasure to welcome on to the program today, Mr. Joshua Abraham. Joshua is from Seattle, Washington, and a professional wakeboarder. He's also the son of international best-selling author Larry Abraham. who was the first to expose the Illuminati in 1971 in his book entitled None Dare Call It Conspiracy. Just a little book, only sold 5 million plus copies. No big deal, right? Yeah, I know. So, thank you so much. Definitely a pleasure to have you on the program, Joshua. It's awesome.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. Thank you very much.
You bet. I'm always excited to reach out and talk to more people that I feel like are in the know, because so much of this information, you talk to the average person and they start looking at you funny. So,
right. Yeah. Thank you very much for having me on. It's just, there's a lot going on today that would need to be addressed. And what we're realizing today is that if you knew the research, we're running out of time. So thank you for very much for having me on your program today.
You bet, man. I'm excited about it. Just for the audience, anyone that doesn't know you, this is kind of one of those obligatory first questions, I realize, but how'd you get into this whole thing? I know your dad had to be quite influential. I mean, that book, you know, jokingly 5+ million copies, that's a pretty big deal. So that had to be quite influential, but what else sort of drove you into this line of research?
Well, to be honest with you, it's like when I was a kid, my mom and my dad divorced when I was 2 years old. And, you know, ever since then, it was like I saw him like on the weekends and, you know, sometimes for Thanksgiving. And there was one time when I lived with him for a year in South America when he was living down there. And when he came back to the Seattle area my senior year, I lived with him again for about a year. But then after that, it was, you know, off to do other things. But the thing is like, I never knew, like, throughout my whole experience with my father, like, I never knew, like, what he did for a living. Like, I never read his books or anything. He never talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just, you know, he was just a regular dad. And, but at the same time, like, he had these pictures of him with Ronald Reagan and Mark Thatcher and Ron Paul in his office. And it's like, you know, what's all that about? And, you know, he just briefly glossed over how they're his friends and how they worked with them and blah, blah, blah. He never gave me a definitive answer.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, you know, until 2 years after he passed away that I was driving home from work one day and on talk radio, because, you know, my dad raised me to be a Republican, so naturally
yeah.
I always listen to my talk radio, you know, so I was listening to Glenn Beck one day, and he started talking about this book, how it exposed, because Glenn Beck used to talk about this kind of stuff, like, briefly, like, not very in-depth, but while he was on Fox News and then had his own radio station at night, like, he would briefly gloss over the New World Order and the legislation that's coming through the United Nations, and he briefly touched on mentioning my dad's book, and I was like, Larry Abraham. Like, I turned it up for a little bit, and he said that him and this guy named Gary Allen wrote this book, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wait a minute, like, I can't be the same guy. So I go home, and I get on the computer, and to say the least, I pretty much sank about 6 feet into the ground.
Jeez.
It's just like, wow, dude, like, I came home and I just realized, like, holy dude, my dad started the truth movement. What
yeah.
the hell? You know, and it's very, not, like, alarming, but it's kind of like I understand now, you know, whatever was unclear before. You know, it just made me realize why he lived the way he lived, like, you know, why. Who he associated with, like, it just made perfect sense. And that really sent me into a tailspin of reading because, like, what he told me on his deathbed was really, unique in what he said because I didn't understand it at the time.
Hmm.
And basically, he warned me that there was a global government that was going to be brought about, and I need to get ready for it. And I looked at the doctor, and I'm just like, is he coherent? He's like, yeah, just listen to what you have to say, you know? Because at this point, my dad had the last week of his, you know, of his life was pretty, you know, he wasn't really coherent, and, you know, for the last week of his life. So I was listening to what he had to say, and then the second thing he told me was that if I ever get a thirst for knowledge, I should fully just go with it and do whatever I can to know as much as possible. And I didn't understand what he was saying at that time. I thought it was mumbo jumbo, you know. I thought it was just gibberish, you know. And 2 years later, when I figure all this out, I'm like, no shit. So there is a global gathering coming, and I do need to read some books. So that kind of sent me into a little tailspin of research. Sorry, my roommates are home.
That's right. Get out of here. I can only imagine. From a dad perspective, that's a whole lot to lay on a kid. So I'm glad he sort of did that when you were a bit older.
Yeah, you know, that'd be a lot to throw on your kid. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it is what it is. And I just try to cope with that the best I can.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I've just been on a relentless mission of reading books. I could probably say I've probably close to over 90 books on the subject since like 9 years ago when I started doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, ever since then, I could probably, like, point out 90 books on Amazon. Because the thing is, it sucks. I've lost my library so many times through the moves. It's just... But, yeah, it's just a lot of reading. And when you connect all the dots and all the research together, it really forms an alarming picture. And what people need to understand is that all this language, like the international language of what we know as Satanism, is in our face and it's everywhere. But people need to understand that when they wake up to this, that the main thing is, like, not to do anything rash or not to, like, you know, not to do anything crazy, because what we have to understand is that our world is controlled by satanic sorcerers, like ancient, like imagine like an ancient satanic wizard in like from like back in the Middle Ages. That's who's been in charge ever since, and that is who is ruling our world today. And as sad as that is, and the proof I'm about to give to you tonight on the show is, people need to understand what we're dealing with here, because we actually have the information now on the internet to actually decode our matrix. And once we fully understand that as a people, we know what we're dealing with here. We understand why all the war and why all the GMOs in the food and the fluoride in the water and the, you know, fluctuating economy. And basically, it all makes perfect sense. And what we need to understand is that when we realize that our way of life is fully controlled by people who are Luciferian worshipers and follow accordingly as such, we will understand the mind frame of the people who control our way of life and fully realize why our lives are the way they are. And what's really important to understand is that we need, like, I was raised in Christian and Catholic school my whole life. Mm-hmm. So I was just one of those regular kids, you know. I just never read the Bible, never did any of that. My parents just did it for good education. But what's important to understand to anyone who wants to know anything about this, what I'm talking about, this Illuminati, Freemason, New World Order, there's one book that you need to start at the cornerstone of your knowledge and your research, and that is the King James Bible. The old version King James Bible, I can't stress that enough. Like, I just seriously can't. And then after that, you read Bloodlines of the Illuminati by Fritz Springmeier. And then after that, you can go into Mind Control Techniques of the Illuminati by Fritz Springmeier. And then another great book that cannot be ignored is Behold a Pale Horse by William Cooper. We need to really recognize that literature. Like, and we need to really recognize that there are a lot of good books out there who have the undeniable proof to everything that we'll be discussed tonight. It's just, you know, I have not even attempted to actually get this stuff down on paper. But my quest right now is to build up the information. So nearly, you know, it's just such, because here's the thing, like, when you read what my dad did and what he exposed, he blatantly says it in black and white that he only exposes the international banking systems of this insider group. And that's just one piece of the puzzle. There's many other pieces out there. And when we tackle the puzzles and the pieces to these, like with the bloodlines and the religion of the actual group itself and Freemasonry magic, and we go into their literature, and we go into, because once you go into Freemasonry literature, that diverts you over to a lot of other things. That diverts you over to Egyptian magic, and that diverts you over to Galatia black magic. And when we realize that these people just, you know, who are basically in power in Congress, the senators, a lot of the police force, and a lot of the military, they're all a part of this. And what's important to understand is that we have to know where to begin at this knowledge. And the first book for anyone to begin at this knowledge is, without a doubt, the Old Version King James Bible. And then after that, you know, go ahead, do your research. But once you know the King James and the whole story, you will see everything make sense. Like, I can't make that any more clear.
I'm right there with you. I jokingly have said this a few times. I thought about calling this show the Bizarro World Satanic Death Cult, but the URL was too long. But I think that's exactly what the hell we're living in. It's a Bizarro World Satanic Death Cult. And, you know, you say that to the average person and they just think you're nuts. But everything you said is 100% accurate. I can't stress that enough. We've only gotten a few minutes in here and we've barely scratched the surface, but 100% truth. If you look at that Bible, I mean, we touched on this a little bit a few days ago when we spoke, but if you look at that Bible, there's a lot of supernatural stuff going on in there. There's a lot. If you just look at that Exodus, where Moses is getting the people out of Egypt, they talk about the sorcery of the wizards right there. They talk about the wizards being able to do the same magic that God allowed Moses to do as far as turning the staff into snakes and all this stuff. And they seem to be sort of playing this this sort of cat and mouse of my wizardry is better than yours, until finally Moses and the power of God supersede the earthly wizardry. But go ahead.
Well, yeah, it's just exactly what you said. What we need to really understand is that ever since 1948, pretty much some would say the greatest archaeological find in, you know, the history of the Smithsonian was the finding of the Dead Sea Scrolls. And now that these books are in public now, and we actually have access to this kind of information, what we really need to come to understand is that when you read the King James Bible, it mentions a lot of missing books in there. It mentions the book of Enoch, the book of Jasher, the book of the prophet Nathaniel. It mentions a few books that, you know, are not in there. And once we know that there, instead of the original 66, there's actually 97, then at that point, we have to understand that there's a lot more to the story that the church is not telling us. And for very, very good reason, because what I find very interesting is that when the Catholics released the Apocrypha in the Middle Ages, when the original scriptures were released through Martin Luther and Tyndale and Calvin and company, what's really important is that a lot of people miss that. The Apocrypha is very important to know. Like, that is a very important piece of scripture that is completely linked to the Bible. And after we read the Dead Sea Scrolls along with the Apocrypha and the King James, like, if you get all three of those pieces into view, you're going to realize that this world today is all about what you were just talking about. Like, because if you know Satanism and black magic, you know the legendary, you know, wizard of Balaam. This is the wizard that you were talking about, who was a wizard of the pharaohs during the time of Moses. And if you know, because in the original Bible, it mentions it. Like, it mentions Balaam in the Old Testament, and then once in the New Testament, in the book of Timothy, it mentions his son, Jannes and Jambres. But in the book of Jasher, which is mentioned in the book of Joshua and 2 Samuel, once you read the book of Jasher, it gives a full detail of the magical battle that took place in the pyramid of the Pharaoh. And what we need to understand is that when we study, because this type of magic, it's in perfect view. Anyone can, that's what's so funny about it, is like anyone can get this kind of information, these spell books, like that these people work with. Anyone can get a basic idea along with a lot of information that what these people are doing today goes all the way back to that time in the beginning part of the Bible, the second book of the Exodus. And when we understand that these people, with all their symbols, because Satanism is a very highly structured religion, and it has its own language to it. Like, it has its own complete language. It's called the esoteric mystery religion to some, and to others it's called Luciferianism. To others it's called, you know, Galatian magic, but there's a system out there, and its symbols and its communication that's international, just like mathematics. You know, math is all numbers, but it's just like with other languages that have symbols, like Egyptian hieroglyphics, that's what we're dealing with. Like, we have a style of hieroglyphic in our view that people, it's just right in our face. And if people go to the Abraham Project on Facebook, this is where I'm posting all this kind of information. Some people will know and have the undeniable proof of what I'm trying to tell you. And what's really important is that once we do this research and we decipher this information, we have to really know and understand what we're dealing with and act accordingly, because today's church is so twisted. And I personally, I don't even go to church. Like, I'll be straight up honest, I haven't been to a church service in probably over 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I can't stand it, because it's all singing, it's all everything that Jesus said not to do in the church. Just told everyone, basically, do not pray in public, as the hypocrites do, but they like to be heard for the main things, and they don't, you know, we have to understand that everything that we're doing as a worship is everything that's not written, and it's everything that's, you know, forbidden to act, because, you know, Christianity, just like any religion, has a very strict set of rules and, you know, proceedings for the rituals and ceremonies. And once we understand that today's church is not following suit, it just really, it not angers you, but it really makes you realize, like, how deep the deception really goes. Because these Bible versions today that we have, that these people are fully, like, literally pouring their souls into for direction and guidance, are giving these people a really bad message. And the sooner we realize that, the more we could act accordingly. And I mean, just to give you an example, like, in today's church, what's so important when you spread the gospel among any ministry is that you do the two things that Jesus said. Hmm. And that is to baptize in his name and preach the gospel. Now, when you look in the book of Acts, when Peter and Paul and Stephen, when they were preaching the gospel, you realize the kind of style that they do in it, because they do it in a specific manner and style. And it's nothing what we see in the churches today, because in the book of the Acts, the technique to actually preaching this is very important to how it's done, because this can get twisted, as you can see today with some churches. Wow. Like, it's a freak show on there. It's just, it's like, wow. They're like, has anyone read the Bible? That it just didn't seem like anyone has. And that's the problem, because the powers that be know that with, you know, I forget his name, David, I can't remember his last name, but there's this researcher, David Wilcox.
Okay.
That is on ancient, there's this guy named David Wilcox on Ancient Aliens, who basically said it the best, that in the realms of the occult, when it comes to all this satanic magic, the way that this satanic magic actually holds true form and actually works through their rituals and ceremonies of the direction that they're trying to take their people into, like, it all depends on putting the plan of your intention out in the public and letting the people know that you're fully here and what you're going to do. And in 1871, over in the British Museum, there was a full-blown museum expose, or show, if you will, or display of the plan of the three world wars written out by two Satanists and very high degree Freemasons. They were it was Albert Pike, who was a Confederate general, 33rd degree Freemason, and very, very intelligent Luciferian. And he wrote a letter to Giuseppe Manzini, who was a 33rd degree Mason and the founder of the Italian Mafia that we know today as the Cosa Nostra. These two guys came up with the plan of three world wars to shove us into what the ultimate plan is for the society, and that's a global government called a New World Order. And the First World War went perfectly according to plan. They were they had to get a communist state in Europe and develop an atheistic society. And with the Bolshevik Revolution halfway through World War One, that's exactly what happened.
To a T.
And then World War II. What's that?
I said to a T. They pulled that off perfectly. Anybody that hasn't read or looked into that would be, I hope, shocked, because just about everything, like, we're up to that Third World War right now. You know, everything else has gone pretty smooth.
Yeah, and once we understand, like, how intricately detailed their plan is and how perfectly they execute it, it really brings kind of a very alarming face to reality. And in the Second World War, their plan was to bring about a conflict between England and Germany and set up a Jewish Zionist state in Palestine. And lo and behold, here we have that great war, and that Israel is created 3 years later.
That's it.
And the plan for the Third World War, which is the only world war that's actually prophesied 2,000 years ago in the King James Bible, and people really need to listen up to this, is that the Third World War that they, and keep in mind, like, these guys know the Bible extensively well. That's what a lot of people need to understand. I'm sorry I missed that fact earlier, but know this. Luciferians, high degree Freemasons, and very high degree members of the satanic cults of the Illuminati know the King James Bible more than you could possibly ever understand. These guys are experts at it.
That's what I've always heard. They've been schooled in that and are much more adept in that than most Christians are. That's what I've always heard.
Yeah, and when you realize that, you will see how these people can really just plan everything accordingly, because that's the rule of Satanism. Like, so pretty much it's a game, and that's really hard to say to people, to like put it in a blunt way, but according to all the religious scriptures, if you're a Christian, this is what you gotta know about your faith, is that the powers that be, the light and darkness, so I'm walking on the street and I gotta get out in time.
Sure.
The powers of light and darkness actually, you know, challenge each other, you know, the souls of humankind. And once we understand that this is pretty much just a test of how we conduct ourselves, the easier it'll just make everything just fall into place with our lives. Because, you know, the whole problem with faith today is if it's real or not. And all we have to do is look around and just be like, yeah, there's actually one religion out there that's real, because it's in our face and the people who run our lives are heavily involved with it. And for the Third World War that these guys planned, it's basically, it's a lot different from the original two, because the third one is a war between religions. it's not countries, and it's not like specific places. What they're doing for the Third World War is that they're making it international and just beyond anything we could have ever possibly understood before. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's a war. It's going to be a war between Islam and the Jewish people and all their allies coming together in a classic East versus West that will spread internationally and just basically create such a havoc that people will beg for the war to stop. And out of that, pretty much out of that ashes of war, we'll have a new world order. And that's when we see the mass exodus of so many Muslim people go to Europe, and it just makes everything make sense, because their plan is to, you know, disperse this enemy among us before it's fully executed. So the enemy is everywhere. And, you know, after you read the Quran, I'm just really surprised that people don't wake up to this, because the Quran is clear how their end goal as a faith is to conquer the world and have everybody be a Muslim. And what's that?
I said, that's right. They spell it out for you. You either submit, die, or pay your jizya, I believe, your tax, to be existing in their world, basically.
Well, it's just a very demanding faith. It's either, you know, you believe in our way or we'll execute you.
Mm-hmm.
It's really black or white. It's just, and when we understand that that's what we're dealing with as an enemy, that these people, this is not about money. This is not about power. This is about, you know, something way deeper than just materialist, you know, material things. This is a religious war. And when we take it, when we take World War to that level, like in the First World War, it is just like basically the first war the world had ever seen with mass industrial production of armaments. It was the first time the world had ever seen that. And the Second World War was pretty much, you know, the war of like, okay, you know, let's up the ante on the technology.
Yeah.
Through World War II, we saw like what not just industrial production does, but actual technology to the industrial production of this global machine of war, of, you know, what Dwight D. Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex. And when we understand that, it's really interesting to see how they're actually just taking it up a notch every single time. And now it's going to be a religious war that's going to spread internationally. And because it's going to be a war that's not like the other two that brought about a new kind of government. Because in the First World War, it was about the League of Nations. And then the Second World War is about the United Nations. But in this Third World War, it's going to be about a global religion. It's not just going to be a government, and it's not just going to be a global economic shift population, because as bad enough as that is, how the new global currency will be cashless and it'll just be completely microchipped,
mm-hmm.
and just fully digital. Like, there won't be any cash. Like, cash will be done with. What we're going to realize is that this war is not going to just bring on another type of government. It's going to bring on an entirely different global way of life. And when we realize that, it's really important to tell people that if you can just stop what you're doing just for a little bit and research this and really know in your heart that this is real, I think a lot of people would understand that there are so many things that we do in our life that really don't make any sense or have really a lot of meaning to us, you know, in comparison to the great scope of things.
Yeah, I definitely echo those sentiments. I kind of go back to that old quote where I'm not sure who gets this quote, but basically the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the people he didn't exist. I kind of believe that's exactly what's going on with this Luciferian ideal, that most people just sort of think, oh, that's just Hollywood magic, or they think, you know, they did the satanic panic in the 80s and they basically said, oh, well, that was all just hyped and overindulged. That wasn't really going on. It was all just so-and-so. But your point from the beginning, I think it really goes back to those mystery schools, the Babylonian mystery schools, the Egyptian ones. And there could be further ones that I'm not mentioning. So if I'm missing something, go for it. And I think it really spread from there to the Masonic orders and then jumped to the New World and so forth.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. When people do their research, like, this all stems from Babylon. And when we realize that every single religion besides Christianity comes from Babylon,
mm-hmm.
we have a really different perspective on what we're really dealing with here, because after you read the Quran, after you read the Bhagavad Gita, after you read the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, you know, all these pagan literatures that consult their religious aspects of life, it's very interesting and it's very eye-opening to why these people live the way they do. And what I find incredible is that, like, here in America, we just, you know, we just watch the news and it's all about celebrities, sports people, and whatever, but
yeah.
There's a lot of things going on in the world that the media doesn't really report on. Like right now, you know, speaking of pagan religions, we have a person over in Nepal. People need to understand, like, in the Hindu Buddhist faith, the Buddha, the actual deity of the Buddha, meditated under a tree with no food or water for 49 days. Okay? We have a guy in Nepal right now who did it for 10 months.
Good God, that's insane.
Yeah, and he's actually called the Maitreya, and this is the name of the Buddhist Antichrist, because when you do the research and you read all the religious scriptures of the old ancient times, you'll realize they have a really interesting common denominator. How they're all waiting for this world teacher, like a deity of every, you know, of their religion, to bring about a global government under their basic way and premise of life. Like, and for the Buddhist faith, it's called the Fifth Buddha, otherwise known as the Maitreya.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very strong belief that the Maitreya is living among us right now over in Nepal. If anyone just Google searches that, they call him the Little Buddha. Like, this guy had his own following. I mean, this happened, you know, this event when he went under the tree for 10 months, this happened back in 2005 or 2006, I believe. So it's been going on for a little bit, and our media has not reported on this. And with all the Eastern influence over here today with this new age, you know, with yoga and all, but it would just be, it would be extremely huge. Like, people would freak the fuck out. They're like, oh my God, we actually, you know, this is, and it's pretty funny. I was like, wow, like, there's an actual possible Buddhist deity over there, and the Western media is just completely blacked out about it. They do not touch it.
That's pretty terrifying in and of itself. Kind of going back to that, to the Babylon thing, I remember the big Tower of Babel story as being one of those kids' stories. That's one of the few, before I started reading the Bible again, that I remembered, you know, the Tower of Babel, they just built this big tower. And kind of to your point, it's one of those things that's often just obfuscated or just given the broad strokes, or it's like, yeah, they just built this big tower and then God changed the language. But,
well,
there's a lot more going on in that story than just the cliff notes.
Yeah, and it's all in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Like, it's really, that's a very important character for the Dead Sea Scrolls, is Emperor Nimrod, who did build the Tower of Babel. He has, there's a lot of information in there in the Book of Enoch and the Book of Jasher and the Book of Jubilee about the Emperor Nimrod. And any Freemason will tell you who does his research that the craft of Freemasonry and all its magic and all its rituals, everything, came from the Tower of Babel. Like, some will say, oh, you know, it's Solomon's temple. Some will say, no, it's the second temple. But people who do their research know that this goes a lot deeper than that, that the builders from the land of Tyre and the land of Lebanon that we know today came from that part of the world. And they were the ones to do it. And when all their symbols and the international black magic language that they had back in that day transpired and trickled into our reality today. It's really eye-opening, and it's a shock to say the least, because when you realize, like, the symbols and the logos of all these huge, you know, multi-billion dollar world-running corporations like Microsoft and Facebook and Google, like, when you realize those company logos and, like, Starbucks, like, these logos that they put as symbols to represent their company and everything that they do are the same symbols in the realm of satanic black magic. And it's really interesting that when you look, if you just look at the, you know, design of these logos, how it's really just in our face. Like, give you an example. Like, right now I'm talking on my iPhone. Okay.
Sure.
The symbol of the Apple iPhone is the little apple with the bite taken out of it. And people, you know, in the regular world would just think nothing of it. It's just an apple to give your teacher and blah, blah, blah.
Sure,
it's just harmless. Yeah, but people who know black magic and know the language of Satanism know that that is the symbol of knowledge that Lucifer gave to man ever since the Garden of Eden, because that was the first point, like, in the Bible where man made contact with the dark side and in exchange gave him knowledge, because that is the fruit of knowledge that Apple portrays as their symbol. And to slam that, you know, point even harder home is, if you do your research, that you would know that the first Apple computer sold for an exact price that they priced it.
Sure.
And it was bought. They priced that first computer that they ever sold at $666.66.
Good grief.
So,
just a coincidence, I'm sure.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It happens too often in today's world, and it's just when, you know, about 20 coincidences in of that kind of, you know, level, it's just like, you know, I'm kind of over that coincidence phase.
Oh, exactly. Me too. Yeah, I mean, what you were saying makes perfect sense, because I was thinking of that sort of initial passage from the Bible where it's talking about the Tower of Babel, and they say, come, let us make bricks and burn them hard. So they're talking about masonry. They're talking about making these bricks to build this huge ziggurat to the sky, basically. So,
yeah, and the thing is, what people need to really know is that when you read the Bible, right there in the first few chapters of Genesis, it talks about this guy called Tubal-Cain. As, you know, because there was Cain and Abel, and then a descendant from Cain was this man named Tubal-Cain. And Tubal-Cain was the first worker of metals and swords and weapons of war. And basically, it goes back all the way to that point. And the actual symbol for the third degree of Freemasonry and a Master Mason is the symbol of the Tubal-Cain. And that just happens to be the exact same symbol as Facebook. Because when you take the symbol of Facebook and just put it right next to that medallion, anyone can Google search it. It's just, you just Google search the medallion of third degree of Freemasonry of the Tubal-Cain, and you will see it's just exactly the same symbol as we see on Facebook. And when you do your research even more, you realize that Mark Zuckerberg is a Freemason himself and has distant blood ties relations to David Rockefeller.
Gosh, I'm doing it as we speak, by the way, and it's absolutely correct.
Yeah, and it just really, if you know the story of the Bible and you know the bloodlines, everything makes sense, because then people will understand why certain people are in power. These people just don't get lucky, okay? These people just, you know, they don't just have an idea. That's what everybody wants you to think, that you just have a great idea and you just shoot to the moon. And it's just like, no, it's not about what you know. It's about who you know. And if who you know is very involved with the economic system, you have a really clean shot of bringing your product in and then fully funding it to just make it better. You know, it's just, there's a lot of, if you look through the corporations themselves, and if, you know, my dad's book was all about just follow the money. And that's what made that book so extraordinary, to actually, because when that started the truth movement, everyone could, that he wrote it on a topic that everyone could understand. You know, he wrote about the money aspect, and that's, you know, just one aspect in itself. But when he described and explained that to people, it made people realize, oh, well, there are just a certain group of people who control the entire society. And it just goes, it goes all the way back to these ancient black magician tribes since the days of antiquity. And the symbols are just, I just laugh. Like,
jeez.
If you, if people just go to my page, the Abraham Project, and there's so many other, just, JesusIsSavior.com. I don't know if he did that. Just go, Fritz Springmeier's website. That'd be a good one too. There's just so many good places you can go to actually, like, cross-reference all this information. You will see how the information that I'm putting up on my page on the Abraham Project, it's very, very researched. I don't put anything up there without doing my homework on it. And, like, the other day, I gave a post and pretty much an explanation on sleep paralysis. And basically, in sleep paralysis, there's no scientific way, like, you bring this problem to doctors, they really don't have a solution for it. But when people feel this suffocating pressure on their chest when they wake up, and it just scares the living daylights out of them, it's very interesting how when you say the name of Christ, that it just instantly goes away. And I know that's kind of a broad subject and kind of like just, you know, putting that out there to say, but if you ask anybody, I don't have a problem with sleep paralysis, but I have talked to other people who have very extensively about it. And what the common thing is that when you're sitting there and you can't, or laying there and you can't even speak, but even if you think it, like, you think, like, Jesus, please, like, help me, or anything that has to do with the name of Christ, and if you know your Bible, you know exactly what to say. But anything that has to do with Jesus and Christianity, it fixes the problem. And that's a really, you know, that's a really interesting fact. If we just, you know, just certain things happen the way they do, and that's the only way you can take care of it. It's like there's really no medication or treatment out there for sleep paralysis. You know, yeah. And a lot of people experience this, you know, and once we understand that, if we just keep going on this train of knowledge, you know, because it's just such a, it's so brand new to the world. It's only been since the 70s, so what's that, like 40 years? So,
yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and with the finding of the Dead Sea Scrolls back in 48, you know, we really have the information to really know everything and what we're dealing with. And basically, it's just a matter of people wanting to know, because William Cooper said it best, but when he was giving a speech in Michigan, he said in not so many words, but he said, you'd be surprised how many people don't want to know the truth and just prefer to be slaves.
I would totally agree.
Yeah, and that's what happened to me in my early experience with this little roller coaster I've been doing for the past 9 years. Because in the past 9 years, I've gone on Alex Jones, I've done Coast to Coast 3 times, I've done John B. Wells' show, Caravan of Midnight, and countless other national radio shows and local radio shows and podcasts, and just, you know, and it's just really, if I can say one thing at this point in my life, it's just, as long as we just know who we're dealing with, we'll know how to basically conduct ourselves as a society. And what we have to understand is that the prophecies of the Bible are coming into full fruition, because the Third World War that we were discussing earlier, that's the only world war that's actually discussed and prophesied in the Bible in the book of Ezekiel, the war of Gog.
Mm-hmm.
And the war of Gog against the prince of Meshech, which is in that area at the time called the area of southern Russia, we understand, like, why are the American media is pumping up the public to understand that there is an enemy out there and it's named Russia. And we understand, like, the people who are doing this and running the media, all forms of media for that matter, and our military, and our, especially our economy, like, they are fully aware that it's all leading up to this third world war to bring about this great world teacher. And, you know, he's got many names. The Jews call him the Messiah. The Buddhists call him the Maitreya. The Islams call him the Imam Mahdi. Like, we have to understand that we actually might very well have one of these antichrists that Jesus talks about in the Gospels on the scene right now. Because Jesus clearly said in the end times that there will be many antichrists. But there will be one that they bring about in the full power and fruition. And out of these many antichrists, we may have one living among us over in Nepal right now. And knowing that, and also knowing the prophecy of the book of Hosea in the King James Bible, is that when the Jews return to the land of Zion, that marks the beginning of what the Bible calls the latter days, and that's the end times. And ever since that happened in Israel in 1948, at the end of the Second World War, ever since then, we who do our research know that ever since Israel was created, we haven't been officially, by biblical terms, living at the end times. And once we understand that and see all the history that's happened ever since the formation of Israel, we can fully come to grips with what we're dealing with here. It's fully in view, fully within our grasp of knowledge to understand and know. And these people will execute the plan that they have for us if we don't do anything about it. Because as David Wilcox said, as we were discussing earlier, that satanic magic and occult magic has no power if it's not in the open and if people don't know about the plan. You know, they don't put it in the open. It's even on the back of the $1 bill, on the American $1 bill. It's just in Latin. It says, "Anno et coeptis, God has ordained the Novus Ordo Seclorum, the new order of the ages." Of that new order of the ages, the new world order. They're just putting that on the back of the $1 bill to let everybody know that eventually we will have a new order of the ages, a new world order through this money system, and it's going to be ran by the banking industry. And we have to understand that when they put this in our face, and we don't do anything about it, they will execute. But if we stand up to it, they won't execute because they need us as casualties for this plan. We are just cannon fodder and expendables for what they are ultimately going to do.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. I know I feel a bit dark and morose quite often, but I kind of come to that conclusion all the time where I look around. You know, you go to the big box store, you go out and about and you see all these people, and so many people just aren't receptive to any of this and have that cognitive dissonance. And I just kind of think, man, there's a lot of people that are just not even going to survive like the first wave of the attack, so to speak. It reminds me decades ago, kind of connecting to the Masonic and the Christian sort of things we were talking about a moment ago. I think I was probably 18 or 19 and I was just working some crap job. But at the time I was really into punk and hardcore and skating and all that stuff. And a guy I worked with was a bit older and he was a very devout Christian, or at least that's what he said, but also very involved in the Masonic stuff. And for whatever reason, something he told me always kind of stuck in my brain because he was talking about his Masonic order and he couldn't talk about it and all this, you know, usual suspect stuff. But anyway, he was saying that, you know, if I broke down on the side of the road, all I would have to do is get out and sort of leave some signal basically outside of the car that any other Mason or, you know, Masonic Lodge member would recognize, and they'd come help me and give me a ride and all this stuff. And I was like, that is weird. You know, there's all you got to do is throw out your sign and any member of this international organization will come help you. And you sort of juxtapose that to what we talked about with the Luciferianisms and the Christianity. I'm like, how the heck can you profess this devout faith on the one hand and then at the same token be so blind to the obvious Luciferian connections to all this?
Well, that's a very, very good question. And basically what all Masons out there who listen to this program need to understand is that in Masonry, it's nothing but deception. And that's exactly the game that Lucifer plays on even his own people, that he is all about deception and he will not give you certain pieces of information until you've proven yourself worthy for what his plan is. And what Masons need to understand is that when you do the required reading through the Masonry lodges, because that's what Masons do, they're supposed to read a lot of books, and the first one being the King James. That's the first book that every Mason here in America is supposed to read, because, I mean, some will say, oh, I was Muslim, I was given a Quran, or I was Hindu, so they gave me a Bhagavad Gita. I mean, be that as may be, you know, that was just because there's four main religions, the four holy texts in Masonry, and that's the Quran, the King James Bible, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Book of the Law by Aleister Crowley. And those four main religions, with Aleister Crowley being the fourth, which that is satanic black magic, with those four being the lead, you know, those are the four holy books in Masonry and the four holy religions. And when you read the King James Bible, which is the strongest by far out of all of them, you realize that these Masons are fully doing what Jesus told them not to do, because the Old Testament, about Masonry, it goes very into depth about the building of Solomon's Temple. And it goes very into depth about how the original Freemason prophet, Hiram Abiff, like where he came from, who his father was. Like, every Mason knows about the prophet, Hiram Abiff. He was a prophet of Freemasons from the Old Testament. He came from the land of Tyre in the tribal land of Asher. And he was a part of the Israeli tribe of the Naphtali. And when Masons understand that everything that they're doing, that starting from their oath that they take from the oath of light, is everything that Jesus said not to do. Because the Bible is very clear when Jesus says, never swear an oath at all, because all oaths come from evil. And when you're a first degree Mason, and you're first degree of fellowcraft, you know, you are blindfolded with a noose around your neck and there's a sword to your heart, and you swear on this checkered floor, this black and white checkered floor, that if you expose any secrets to the Masons, that you give them permission to slit you from ear to ear, pull out your tongue, and bury your body at low tide in the ocean. That's what you swear upon.
And
it's just like when you realize that is the oath of Masonry, there's a sound. Like, do you hear that? There's like a tapping sound.
Oh, that's me on my end. Yeah, I got some background nonsense going on outside.
Okay. But yeah, when you go into this information and you realize like what they're doing, because this oath is exactly what the Bible says, because Jesus said, never swear an oath. And never swear on your head, for neither hair will be black nor white. And any Mason who understands the esoteric language knows that when Jesus spoke in the Bible, he spoke in very esoteric, or what normal people would call Freemasonry terms. Like, all these Mason rituals, ceremonies, went back to the same Pharisees that crucified Jesus. And the prophet Isaiah was very clear in the prophecy how when the Son of God reveals himself to us, that he will be, quote unquote, the cornerstone of the foundation that the stone builders have rejected. And when you realize that when Jesus called out the Pharisees, and that's exactly what he said, he goes, I am the cornerstone which the stone builders have rejected, And in Masonry, you know that your basis of worship goes all the way back to the cornerstone of Hiram Abiff when he built the gates to the Solomon Temple between the two pillars of Jachin and Boaz. You realize, like, when you know the esoteric language, the Bible makes complete more sense, and this is exactly what Jesus called out. You know, he called out the Freemasons 2,000 years ago, and they crucified him, excuse the language, but he called out the Freemasons over 2,000 years ago, because if you're a Mason, you know that the cornerstone and the bringer of light, all that lingo throughout the Masonry lodges, all goes back to the King James Bible. And when you understand that the Bible said what it said, because the Bible could have said anything, but the fact that Jesus said what he said, and you really know what he said, and you understand what he was talking about, you understand the Bible, because that's the problem with people, with these new versions, they just can't understand the Bible. The King James Bible is a sixth grade reading level. You know that?
I didn't know that. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, the King James Bible is a sixth grade reading level. It's like, are you smarter than a fifth grader kind of crap, you know? come on. The King James really isn't that hard to read.
Jeez, that's crazy.
And the more knowledge you do outside of the Bible, within the realms of the esoteric knowledge, you'll understand what the Bible's truly trying to explain to us and tell us, and it's just as clear as day. It's just a full decoding of what we would call our current matrix, because all these symbols that signify the corporations that control our way of life, those exact logos and symbols mean more to the esoteric, initiated members more than you could ever possibly understand. This is how they communicate. This is how the owners of Google, with their little new symbol, with that little round Google symbol,
mm-hmm.
it's actually a 666. If you look at it with no color, if you just take off the color display on it and you look at it for what it is, you'll realize it's just a 666 symbol, and that's just their way of telling people and everyone out there that, you know, the people who own this corporation are into the esoteric and the black magic. So, you know, other companies who come to invest, you know, whether it be Facebook with their third degree Masonic symbol, or whether it be Microsoft with their symbol of witchcraft with the four cubes within the cube and the four colors of the elements, you know, Walmart with the six-pointed star of the symbol of Brenton, it just goes on and on. And what's important to really understand is that when we realize that our world is controlled by Satanism and everything that word has to entail, it's really, it's a liberating experience. And I wish to spread this message for as long as I'm alive, because I'll be honest with you, like, I've been, you know, every month the Masons get together for an open public dinner. Every Mason lodge does this.
Okay.
And if people want to go to these lodges, you know, you just go, it's either the first Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of every month. You know, every Mason lodge is open to the public, and they have these fully catered dinners, and the public can just come in and be like, hey, you know, just want to check your place out, but there's a back chamber room that they let nobody into. And this is pretty much, after I did all this research, that's basically how I started out. I started going to, you know, little open public functions, started talking to a few Masons, and then lo and behold, one day, the Mason kind of took me aside, and we kind of got away from after the dinner. And this guy was a 33rd degree Freemason, and he knew who my dad was. You know, he knew I've been on a few radio programs talking about this, and he pretty much gave me all his knowledge as a 33rd degree Freemason. I'll never disclose his name. Like, I promise him that. I'll never disclose his name. But basically, he gave me the knowledge that he had as a 33rd degree Freemason, and that was a very pinnacle point in my life experience, because at that point I realized that there's that the books that we read about this knowledge are saying one thing, but there's a lot of they're not talking about. And when you really know the knowledge of an initiated member to that high of a level, it's really revealing. You know, I'm really happy to be on this program, and it really gives me a, you know, because I really couldn't sleep with myself at night if I didn't try. And I think now that I fully understand, like, the way my dad was and the way he lived his life and who he was as a person, I fully understand, you know, why he did some of the things he did and why he basically conducted his life accordingly. And it's really, it's not every day that someone finds out that their dad is, you know, the leader of the Illuminati resistance. It's just,
yeah, that's pretty heavy, I gotta say.
Yeah, it's like, it's not every, you know, that's pretty, whatever, you know? And it's,
if nothing else, this show's helped me because I feel like it's a big global support group because I get to speak with folks like yourself every week. And, you know, on a sidebar, it's therapeutic because it's a heck of a lot of information to carry around with you. And I've talked with my wife about it before because she's like, how do you talk about this stuff and research this stuff and read and watch it? And I'm like, I don't know. I got to. Somebody's got to tell people about this stuff. I mean, it'd be a heck of a lot easier just to try to cut it off and, I don't know, do normal people stuff.
Well, that's the thing. You can always try, but, you know, once you know, it's hard to just go about normally. It was for me.
Oh,
you know?
It's impossible, yeah.
It's just like, okay, like, this is why all my friends went to war. Because you have to understand, like, my senior year, that was when the towers fell. I was class of 2001, you know, and so here I am, you know, all my friends turning 18, like thinking they're going to go to college and take over the family business. Mm-hmm. Half my class, half my class joined up to go over to Iraq. And, you know, my first roommate out of high school, he was training for the Marines while we were living together. He was going to be a Marine sniper. So for the next 2 years after high school, me and him lived together, and I'd wake up every morning and here's this guy dry firing his rifle with a quarter on the barrel, just trying to keep his, you know, yeah, his shooting muscles, you know, it's like, and then my old childhood friend, I had two best friends from 5 years old till I was like 10. And one of those guys joined the Navy SEALs. And it's just, it was like, you know, and they asked me, like, you know, don't you love your country? Don't you want to go to war? I'm like, hold on a minute, man. I'm like, something's not adding up here. My dad made me, I don't know why, but now I know. Well, now I know.
Yeah.
I didn't know why at the time. I didn't know why at the time. My dad made me promise him I'd never join up. Like, he made that very clear. He's like, promise me you won't join up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was, like, one of the first things he said when I called him, like, while I was on the news. Yeah, he was like, promise me you won't join up. And I'm like, I promise. And he's like, all right, I'm going to hold you to that. Because,
mm-hmm,
you know, because he knew at that point what was really going on, you know, and that, you know, even though he didn't tell me what I should have known, but, you know, he kept me out of harm's way, and I'll always thank him for that, you know, because I want, make no mistake, I was thinking about it because all my friends were doing it, you know, this is like back in the 30s when, you know.
Yeah.
Just like back in the 30s when America got hit by Pearl Harbor, you know, same amount of casualties, 3,000 people, 3,000 Americans dead. It's just like, wow, now it's not just soldiers, it's civilians. So, you know, now we're dealing with a whole different beast. You know, that was Pearl Harbor on a military base. Now it's in downtown, local Starbucks, you know. It's just, you know, we are dealing with a different beast here, and it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And once we realize, like, because once you study history, you know, you'll see the design, because it always happens. These Luciferians play the same tricks over and over and over, even since, you know, even in the scriptures. now that I think about it, like, pretty much Satan's game and how he runs his whole little clique, is exactly the same way as the Old Testament and the Bible. And when you read the Dead Sea Scrolls, it'll just, the Dead Sea Scrolls are great because they just get more in detail about the original 66, what they talked about. There's just, there's more detail to it. There's a lot more going on. There's, like, the reading of the Dead Sea Scrolls for any pastor or any, you know, someone who's really strong about their faith, like, the sooner you read the Dead Sea Scrolls, and the best version for that is, it's a book by Joseph Lumpkin called The Lost Books of the Bible, The Great Rejected Text. And this man, in my research opinion, this guy has the absolute best translation of the Dead Sea Scrolls here in the public that we can access today, easily in the King James Bible.
Yeah, thank you for throwing that in there, because that was actually a question I was going to ask you a little later on. Because I remember about 5 or 6 years ago myself, I went into fill-in-the-blank Christian bookstore, and I'd only had, you know, one version. I think I, you know, had the King James version like yourself growing up. But I came in there and go like, okay, I want to know, you know, I want a book with the missing books in it. And the guy kind of looked at me like I was nuts, and I was like, no, there's all these missing books, the ones you've already mentioned there. And I was like, yeah, I want the full thing. I don't want the edited version.
Yeah, it's like, well, Bible stores today usually have, like, just a couple of them, whether that be, like, the Book of Enoch or, you know, they'll always have that in there. But there's a lot of Bible stores today that have complete, you know, the complete translations of them. And it's all about, you know, like, as soon as we found the Dead Sea Scrolls, literally thousands of translators from all over the world attacked this project. Mm-hmm. And what we have to realize is that throughout the history of even the King James Bible, you know, there were a lot of different versions up until the point of that time of 1611 when King James the First came to the throne of England. And when we understand, like, how even at that point there were many versions, but there was really what he knew as the one correct version, and he did it. We have to understand the same principles apply with the Dead Sea Scrolls. There's a lot of different versions out there, and there is actually one correct version, and it has basically everything. Because what it makes it so legitimate is that it perfectly coincides with everything that the Bible talks about. And there's just so much more detail. Another reason why I don't go to church is because these mega churches, like with Joel Osteen and...
Don't even get me started. Yeah. I got conned into going to one a few years ago, and it was like this huge Coliseum thing, and it was like smoke and lasers and like a 5-piece band and a whole 9 yards, and we're sitting like 100 feet away from the pastor, who's really cool, man. He's got his jeans on, his little sandals, and he's really hip. And I was just going, God, I'm in the wrong place. I need to leave.
Well, the thing is that these mega churches, like, they are teaching some Bible versions that are completely illegitimate when you know the scriptures of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Give you an example, like the New International Version, which is the most sold Bible version in America today, is missing 16 scriptures from the New Testament. 16.
That's all.
Verses, 16 verses that are really, really important that are just completely gone. And the name of Lucifer, the one time the Bible mentions the name Lucifer in Isaiah 14:12, that name Lucifer is completely gone. And when we realize that these Bibles today, here's another example. In Hebrews 9:10, if you go to a New International Version, Hebrews 9:10, you would know in the King James Version that what the scripture talks about is the second coming of Jesus, called the time of the Reformation. But in the New International Version, they say, and I quote, the time of the new order. They are using the exact same language, and they are preparing people for when the shit goes down and people run the church, they can just point to that and be like, yeah, what our government is talking about, a new world order, is a new order right here in the scripture, so it's going to be okay.
Yeah. That's what's so disgusting to me overall about most of these churches now is that nobody seems to be preaching about what's going on now. They sort of give you the sugar-coated version of like, oh, let's embrace diversity and let everybody in and peace, love, and hippiness, brah. But, you know, they're sort of leaving out all the despotism and insanity and how it connects to Revelation and to what you were saying. Connects even to the Buddhist text where they've got this guy meditating for months on end, and they're missing the forest for the trees at the very least.
Yeah, and it's just what we have to understand is that we are actually in, like, when people read the Bible, it's just not just a book of history. It's a lot of prophecy. And with these mega churches today, like, their message to people is exactly the opposite of what the Bible says according to prophecy. All these mega churches preach, which is very important to the Christian faith. Like, this is a very, like, one of the most key components and most important pieces to the Christian faith is the time of the rapture. Hmm. People need to understand that as a Christian faith, the rapture is the moment when people know that they are worthy under God or not. And all these mega churches are making a valid effort to preach pre-tribulation rapture. And when you preach pre-tribulation rapture, that gets people in a state of mind that everything's going to be okay.
That's it.
But what people need to understand is that when you read the Bible, Jesus said twice, I mind you, not once, but Jesus said this twice, in the book of Matthew and in the book of Mark, that he will return and take his elect from the earth up into the clouds immediately after the tribulation. That's the true test of Christianity. The true test, when you read the Bible and you know the 7-year tribulation that's coming, which will be the Third World War, you will know that the test of Judgment Day is not just one day. Judgment Day is 7 years of war. And that's exactly the length of time of what the Bible calls the Great Tribulation. And then Jesus said, immediately after that Great Tribulation, that's when I'll return and take my people off the face of the earth. And so when people understand that the faith falls under that line, it goes exactly to what the Bible says even later in the New Testament, how in the time of the end, in the great apostasy, the great time of falling away, people will not want to hear the actual true scriptures, but actually what their ears are itching to hear to make them fully comply with the society basically around it. I don't know the scripture exactly off the top of my head, but if you look in the New Testament under itching ears, you will see how in the end times of the great falling away, what we're seeing in our churches today, that people are just with itching ears only wanting to hear what they want to hear and not what the actual Bible says and how it relates to today's times and today's events and every aspect of our life that we are living currently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I really find that I don't attend church, because there's not a church service that I can find that actually focuses the discussion on how our religion relates to us today. It's very simple. They always go in past tense or dealing with certain issues and how that relates. Like, no, let's not deal with, you know, a time frame or problems. Let's deal with what we're seeing on, like, the news. Let's see what we're dealing with, you know, as a society.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, what you were just saying kind of brings to mind that old Karl Marx quote, something about religion being the opioid of the masses. I kind of think that's kind of what it's become, or at least the organized religion that you and I are talking about seems to have become that, because they don't want to hear the truth. They just want to do, I just kind of term it as religious aerobics, where you go to church and you sing and you pray and you sing and you pray and you sing and you pray. You're up and down, up and down. You turn around and shake hands, and then it's then it's a little like 10-minute sermon that really doesn't relate to anything relevant, and then you're out of there.
it's the people are just leaving the churches by the droves, because we have a mainstream of Christianity today that, if you ask, like, it's funny when I even challenge these pastors about scripture. Recently, I went to a Jehovah Witness pastor and basically told, well, you know, I'm a Mason myself, and I'm very familiar and affiliated with the Masons, and your prophet to your church, Pastor Charles Taze Russell, who created the Jehovah's Witness Church, was a very high degree Freemason and a convicted sex offender.
I didn't know that.
And, yeah, and when you realize that aspect, where that faith actually comes from, because anyone knows, you know, truth is, you know, the truth of a tree is ultimately, you know, among and bared by the ripeness of its fruit. You know, a tree is only as good as its fruit, and sure. It's just, there are certain sects of Christianity that just have no business being here. And like, take the Mormons, for example. That is Freemasonry on a religious level. Basically, Mormonism is a religion of Freemasonry. They talk about the order of the Melchizedek all the time, which is very familiar in Freemasonry. Joseph Smith himself was a very high degree Freemason. And if you look at these private rituals that these Mormons do, they wear the same aprons as Masons do when they have their little, you know, private little ceremonies. They wear these little aprons, not with the Masonic symbols on them, but actually the actual same premise as what a Masonic apron would look like without the designs.
Yeah.
So we have to understand, like, when we claim to be Christian, we have to be really careful with what we're actually claiming to be, because if you, you know, if you study this conspiracy, my dad in his book Black and White called it the Satanic Conspiracy. He basically put it out there how if you do the research, that you will understand that this Satanic Conspiracy cannot be denied or even proven wrong. It's just, you know, God bless my dad for just keeping, you know, if he was just alive for 5 minutes, I would thank him for keeping me in the dark, because ignorance is bliss. But I'd be like, why did you? Like, you know, I would have made such better choices with my life, you know?
Yeah.
But be that as it may, it's just, when we do the research and everything around the Bible, and we realize the versions, and it, like, Satan's deception has no bounds. It's in the Bible versions, it's in our currency, it's in our military medals. Like, this is what I find very fascinating, is that the symbol of the Congressional Medal of Honor, the highest military medal an American soldier can achieve, the symbol to this medal is a circle with an upside down pentagram. And when you do your research on the origin of that symbol, because every symbol has an origin, you know, symbols are just like anything else. You can research a symbol.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of people out there in this world who have written books on the study of symbols. And when you take these symbols back to their original roots and when they actually came from, you realize what they mean and what their true intentions are to symbolize as an action or an organization of some sort. Like, these symbols that we have today are very meaningful to the people who run this world of ours, like the American dollar. We could have put anything, any kind of symbol for the reverse seal of the United States back in 1933. But we decide to put, you know, the 13-step pyramid of the Illuminati all-seeing eye, because this was basically, you know, this basically is telling the world, you know, this is our corporation, and this is what we are in charge of, and anyone out there who knows this language, you know, now you know. It's just a language within a language. It's just a coding. Our whole society is just coded with a different language. It's just like, it's really bizarre, because they really put it in our face. I mean, any American can understand movies, okay? So
yeah.
If there's anyone out there to understand what I'm talking about, can understand it better in a movie sense, and I really hate doing this because it seems really unprofessional, but I'll do it.
Go for it. You're spot on, man. You got to really dumb it down for the general public. And I don't mean that in a sense to the people, but when you try I give people little breadcrumbs and they can't even handle it. So I'm just like, okay, never mind. Just keep talking about Netflix. It's okay.
Well, yeah, like a few years ago, my mom said, if you're going to go into this, you have to understand that you need to describe this like you would be describing it to a 5-year-old child.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's just like, huh. And when I write my book, you know, I've been gathering the information to write my book for the past 9 years now, because when you write nonfiction, that's a hell of a project. I mean, anyone can fart out of Harry Potter. Anyone can do that. It's just like, but when you go into nonfiction, you have to have your facts correct. It's a hell of a project. And the thing is, with my book that will carry on my father's research, you know, that's exactly the kind of way I'm going to go about it. I have to describe it like I'm describing it to a group of children in a library or some shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, my book is going to have a lot of pictures to it. It's like, I decided it's going to have 13 chapters because when you understand the esoteric language, numbers mean just as much as symbols. Every symbol has a meaning, every number has a meaning. So to fire back at them, for what I know about the esoteric knowledge, it's going to have 13 chapters, it's going to have 300 pages, and it's basically going to be a numerical view to those in charge. And what I'm really going to make a point in that little book I'm going to be doing here is that when we understand that there are so many pieces to this puzzle, and when we entail them all, it's not going to be hard to connect the dots and see the actual design. And, you know, in closing here, I got 30 more minutes. But
sure, man.
In closing, I just want to say, what we're dealing with today is quite a phenomenon. And what I'm about to discuss is what I discussed on Coast to Coast with George Norrie for 2 out of my 3 episodes. And I really try to make it clear to people that in today's realm, what we're dealing with, when it has to do with like the most incredible like phenomenon that we have ever seen, is this whole phenomenon of UFOs and basically alien abduction.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we as a species for the first time are going global with an information that there is something else out there.
Yeah, I was going to mention that when you were talking about sleep paralysis and the sort of spiritual realm of incubus and succubus, and you mentioned calling out the name of the Lord. I'd always heard that in relation to that abduction phenomenon as well.
Yeah, and that's a very strong point I made on Coast to Coast, that we have the research now through one of my very close colleagues. His name is Joseph Jordan. He was a member of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, hired by the United Nations to basically investigate UFO people who have experiences with UFOs or aliens. Like, there's people need to understand, like, this is like an independent, you know, research collective with police detectives and very educated people. And he came across that in his research, that he discovered that his organization for the past 70 years has claimed through their conventions that they have publicly and on their website that there is no way that you can escape an alien experience. And he came across information where it was actually the opposite. People did escape these experiences, and how they did it was calling out the name of Jesus' name in like a panic, or saying the Lord's Prayer, or basically anything biblical out of fear in the panic. And he coincided that with a very important, you know, piece of information, how they claim that there's no way to escape it, but yet he has come across information that has. So he told me personally that he went to MUFON and brought this information to the table, and the first thing they said is, can we go off the record?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, let's go off the record. And they said, yes, we in the research collective have come across this information too in different parts of the world. But the reason we didn't bring it out in the open is because of two reasons. Number one, scientifically, we didn't know what to make it. And that's understandable as a scientist. He told me that, you know, as a scientist, that's understandable, because as a scientist himself, he didn't know what to make it of either, you know, make it of either.
Sure.
So the second piece of information that he received, why they kept it out of the public, is very interesting. They did not want to ruin their credibility within the realm of the scientific research.
Mm-hmm.
So when he understood that, he realized that there is an actual cover-up in his own organization. And when you deal with this kind of research, all you're dealt with all day is government cover-up this, government cover-up that. But when you have a cover-up within your own people, now you got a problem. Because here is a very vital piece of information to add to the puzzle of what we're trying to understand, what we're dealing with here. And that's a very important piece, because in my research, in Luke 10:17, there's one time in the Bible where Jesus actually describes demons.
Mm-hmm.
The group of the 70 of the Sanhedrin at the time, they went out and they cast out devils through Jesus' name. And he's like, yeah, I give you the power to tread on serpents and scorpions with my name. Now, he made that very clear. It wasn't red devils with pitchforks. It wasn't ghosts or goblins. He described them as serpents and scorpions.
Hmm.
And when you realize that the aliens who are abducting us today, the manifestation that is described to the people who are taken are large reptilian or insectoid-looking form, you realize that what Jesus said that, if you just break it down, it's serpent, scorpion, reptile, insect, reptilian, insectoid. And it just makes perfect sense once you just break it down. Hmm. So basically what we're dealing with here is what the public calls aliens is actually the demons that we know of as demons in the Bible. That's basically what the whole ancient astronaut thing is on History Channel, how they call them ancient astronauts. And the funny thing is that there is more evidence today to prove that what they're saying, that these things are intergalactic space aliens that travel from another solar system, like just basically intergalactic traveling entities. They're not that at all.
Hmm.
What we're really dealing with here is interdimensional demonic entities. They're not intergalactic space traveling entities. These are interdimensional demonic entities. Because the two people who did this research back in the 70s with J. Allen Hynek and Jacques Vallée, that was completely funded by the UN to go after this kind of research, they said very clearly that the actions that take place between these interactions with abductees and aliens is very similar to the rituals of the occult.
Hmm.
And when I went on Coast to Coast with George Norrie, I said very clear that there's only one thing in this world that is exactly the same as alien abduction, and that's satanic abduction. Because if you look in FBI reports, there's a certain class of information called SRA, and that's satanic ritual abuse. There's actually a group of victims out there in America, and let alone the world, that have been victims of a certain crime called SRA, Satanic Ritual Abuse.
100%, yeah.
And with the Satanic Ritual Abuse, the same things that happen to the survivors of these experiences are the same things that happen to the survivors of the experience with the alien abduction. It's like Satanists and aliens, when they take you, they always take you into into a private area and lay you on a table, altar, or slab completely naked. They always sexually molest you. They always do weird carving rituals and experiments on you that create a lot of pain. And they always ingest your blood, whether they drink it or they always have, it's always about your blood at the end of the ritual, how they ingest it, drink it, or just take the blood from an abductee. And it happens in the exact same way. Basically, what we have to understand is that Satanists today with their rituals, when they take people for satanic ritual abuse, they're just basically copying the exact same things that the aliens would do to us if we were taken by them.
Hmm.
They're just trying to do the exact same thing, whether that be, a ritual of sexual molestation or planting them with a trackable piece of technology or anything. Like, just what happens in both those situations and cases is exactly the same. And the people who survive these experiences have the exact same mental trauma with, you know, sex addiction, alcohol addiction, destroyed relationships, seclusion. Like, the PTSD of both these survivors is very apparent and obvious. And when we understand that from a detective's point of view, if you just go out there, you know, with a non-biased agenda, like a police detective, and just take all the evidence for what it's worth and just look it over, you will come to the conclusion as I have. Like, yeah, you know, this isn't rocket science. This isn't rocket science. This isn't this. This isn't that. It's just basic Satanism. And it's just simple as that. And when we understand that we actually have that level of knowledge out on the public and mainstream today, I think it's really going to rock a lot of people that we actually have come into a global awakening. I mean, the thing is with, before the internet is like, you know, the global connection was basically invisible. But now that we have a global connection and to let people of all cultures know about this, we have to really take into the fact that we can actually do something about this. And I understand, you know, from when you try to talk to a lot of people about this, it's pretty much like, you know, I hate using movie references. It's so unprofessional, but it's like in The Matrix. If you watch, The Matrix very closely, it is very explained how there's only 2% of that population that has rejected the programming, and 98%. And 98% fully accepted it, and it would actually fight to protect it. You know, so it's kind of like when you know this level of knowledge, you're in a real small group of people. But the thing is that we are everywhere. You know, there's millions of people who know the exact same thing as me, and it's just...
Yeah.
I like it how... But we can do something about this, but what it's going to take is a lot of work from people who actually know about it to actually try to do something. You know, I'm only one person. I can do only so many radio shows and all that. Like, that's what I can do at this point in my life. You know, I'm trying to do the best I can do. And anybody who can do something, just, you know, it's really frustrating how it should be out there, but we have all the forces working against us because, you know, 88% of the people believe what the media says, and if the media doesn't say it, then it does not wish to be bothered with. So,
yeah, I couldn't agree more. I sort of piggyback on what you were talking about. I always look at America, we have this supreme, like, ethnocentric view of the world, but if you go outside of America, I know you mentioned you lived... I think it's South America for a bit, especially Central America, South America. They have a really heightened perception of the spirit world and of spirituality and all the things that connect dots to the occult and connect dots to the Bible and even to the UFO thing. I mean, if you mention a lot of this sort of information in those parts of the world, they're like, oh yeah, that's just everyday stuff. But then, you know, you cross this magical line and everybody's like, oh, well, CNN and MSNBC didn't tell me this was legitimate, so we better just not talk about it. And especially to those cultures, I always think of the Aztecs because I've done a lot of research on them in particular, but you could look at the Mayans, the Aztecs, and even a guest recently, we were talking about Cahokia there in sort of on the border of Illinois and Missouri, that huge mountain center. But most of these cultures, by most, I mean all, had exactly what you were talking about. They had a human sacrifice, usually involving a slab, usually involving dismemberment. We don't have any evidence of the sexual, but we can probably guess. You know, we got all the other elements. Why not have that last one? So, well, to me, that's sort of connected a lot of dots to that occult, to everything you were just talking about.
Well, we absolutely do have the evidence to make a point in fact of the sexual molestation that happens in these rituals. That's actually a very common point in fact, and the survivors of these people who actually go to the police and actually go on the record of what happened to them when they were taken by these groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read the satanic spell books, you would realize that sex magic is a very, very important piece to satanic ritual. Mm-hmm. And when they have a sacrifice, and it's perfectly black and white and says that, you know, to have sex with the sacrifice is a very, you know, very important part of the ritual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when people read these spell books, they will understand, like, what satanic abduction is basically all about, because these are the same rituals that the Old Testament of the King James Bible talks about when they worship Balaam or Ashtoreth, and the Bible says they go a-whoring after their different gods. That's what they're talking about, because these rituals to these ancient gods, a lot of these rituals have to do with sex magic and orgies and raping victims. And like, these are very intense satanic rituals, and a lot of them have to do with sex and with the sexual magic and basically what they call generativity.
Hmm.
And that's what the G stands for on the Mason symbol. Anyone who wants to know, ever know that the G that you see on the symbol of Freemasonry, it doesn't mean God. It doesn't mean Gnosticism. It means generativity.
Hmm.
And the generativity is in relation to the time when the fallen angels came down, the book of Genesis, and mated with the daughters of men.
Mm-hmm.
When the angels came down and had sex with our women, that was the act of the generativity. And that's what the symbol of Masonry is all about, because people need to know that Masonry magic is very, has very high rankings and echelons of members, that sex magic in Masonry is very prevalent. They actually have a group of Masons. Like, there's the Scottish Rite of Masonry, then there's the York Rite of Masonry, and then they have, like, the female faction, the Order of the Eastern Star, and then they have the young kids faction, the Order of the Demolé. But within Masonry, they have this faction called the Jesters, and the Jesters are a bunch of Masons that have orgies. And these Masons are all in this, you know, orgies and sex parties. And
mm-hmm.
I've only seen it once, but I did see a symbol with those Freemason medallions that we, the Illuminated, put on the back of our car, those little symbols, you know,
sure,
of Masonry. And one of those, I saw an Order of the Jester symbol one time in Pasadena, and I just, that was my first time seeing one of those. But they're out there, and people need to understand that sex magic is very important in the realms of Satanism. So,
yeah,
when you think about the alien abductions and that sort of stuff, you realize that with these glowing orbs that we see in the sky, those are what the Bible calls the fallen angels, because the Bible describes the fallen angels as orbs of light and wandering stars. Like, that's how they describe the fallen angels, and that's what we're seeing in our sky all the time.
Hmm. Yeah, I was wondering, I'm sure there's got to be a connection, though, to the Aztec and the Mayan and even the North American Native Americans, where they had these sacrificial rituals. I mean, the archaeological evidence of Tenochtitlan and Teotihuacan, where they're sacrificing thousands of people. They're always doing it on that slab. There's blood. There's cannibalism. There's all the sort of symbolism that you would see in the occult. And you see the same sort of the plumed serpent god, Quetzalcoatl or Kukulkan. So when I've studied all this, I'm going, that sounds a heck of a lot like the occult stuff. It sounds a heck of a lot like the Babylonian mystery schools or the Egyptians, for sure.
Well, yeah, and you look at the ancient hieroglyphs of Egyptians, they show these ancient reptilian people that are fully, you know, half snake, half men, and reptilians, you know, are snakes with actual legs themselves. Like, these ancient legends, and what the Hopi Indian called the ant people of these big old insectoids that taught them science and technology.
Yeah.
You know, the most ancient civilizations always talk about two groups of these things, these reptilians or these insectoids that taught them all the ancient science, taught them how to build all these pyramids that we can't even build ourselves today. They taught them all this knowledge about the astronomy and the astrology of the stars. And we have a common denominator in the ancient folklore going all the way back to the ancient Sumerian with the lost book of Enki written in Sanskrit. We have that same story of how these reptilian and insectoid things from outer space came from the sky and basically taught us everything we know today. It's like another stupid movie reference I'll give you. It's like in that movie, Batman versus Superman, when Lex Luthor pointed at the picture of the angels and the demons in his father's office, and he goes, you know what, there's only one thing I changed in this office, and that's that painting. It should be upside down, because what we know of today, demons do not come from beneath us. They come from the sky.
Mm-hmm. That goes back to that Central America, Mexico mythos, too, of the underworld and the deities coming from the underworld.
Yeah, and it's just what we know of everything that we have today with the ancient, you know, with the ancient histories and the religious texts and the common knowledge and the research collected that we have today is very simple to draw the dots together and just realize that what we're dealing with, that the mainstream media and the governments of the world will never talk about, is everything that you can find on your own, right off your own little smartphone. You can order every single book. You can order every piece of information I'm talking about right now, just right there on your phone. All you gotta do is know where to look.
Wow.
And it's just really, when you realize that basically the answer and the key to all life's confusions is literally in your hands or in your pocket, believe me. Like, I've done this for 9 years. My dad was the first to expose it. I'm affiliated with the Masons. I'm affiliated with the John Birch Society. And I can tell everyone who's listening to this right now that with your little smartphone, you can know every piece of information in total complete depth of everything that I talked about tonight. And it's just right there at your fingertips for you to figure out for yourself.
Hmm. Well, that's the good news. I like it. I'm glad that it's a much better age than it used to be. I know you talked about Bill Cooper a little bit ago, and back then he had like his own, what was it, the radio show Hour of the Time, but it was on, was it on terrestrial radio or was it only on shortwave? I can't recall. Either way. Yeah, you know, back then it was really hard to get this information. Now, like you said, you can get this stuff right now.
Yeah, and back when he had that show, The Hour of the Time, there was an episode, I think it was in the month of August of 2001, where he basically called out 9/11, and he did so to a point that he was killed by six cops in street clothes outside his home on November 5th, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said on his show, The Hour at a Time, was very simple. He saw this report on CNN, how CNN reported how their camera crew somehow found Osama bin Laden, went into his hideout, interviewed him, and came out saying that the United States will be attacked with Israel within the next couple months.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, now, don't you think that's kind of strange, folks? How the largest military operation in the history of the world, with the biggest budget for intelligence in the history of the world, has been looking for Osama bin Laden forever and just can't find him. But apparently some CNN reporter found him and interviewed him and his top colonels and lieutenants right into his hideout. And he made it very clear. He goes, people, get ready for a major attack.
Yeah.
But it will not, he said very clearly, it's not going to be from Osama bin Laden. That's who they're going to blame it on. It will be the guys behind the plan of the New World Order. And he said that they are definitely going to do something terrible because they haven't successfully gotten the guns away from us and smashed our Second Amendment rights. So they're going to do something extraordinary and blame it on this guy, Osama bin Laden. And sure enough, September 1st rolled around, and not even a couple months later, you know, he's dead.
Yeah, it's kind of silly how many people they've taken out over the years. I mean, I was thinking of Gary Webb and Bill Cooper, and I mean, there's just a laundry list of people they've taken out. I always look at the 90s as like the big setup for what we're seeing today, kind of like you were talking about earlier. They just keep repeating the same play because nobody wises up. You know, they had Oklahoma City, Columbine, Ruby Ridge, Waco, all this stuff, and then the coup de grace with the 9/11 false flag, and now, you know, we're sort of reaping the perverse benefits of all that mess in the 2000s.
Yeah, and it's just
sick.
What I find very interesting is that guys like William Cooper and John Todd and these guys just get killed or go missing, and everything they said is what's going on today. And then there's guys like Alex Jones who are doing all this, and it's funny because Alex Jones, like back in 2012, that was my, like, keep in mind, like, Alex Jones on InfoWars.
Sure.
That was my very first radio, Skype, any kind of interview I've ever did in my life. Like, whether it be local, InfoWars was my very first interview. And after I went on InfoWars, I found it very, like, I got contacted by a few people, and they basically told me, in a nutshell, that Alex Jones has dual citizenship in Israel and Zionist Israel, has 3 social security numbers, and every time he gets arrested for his little endeavors, he never does a day in jail. He's always immediately released when he gets back to the station. And after he talks to a few people, it's just, huh.
Hmm.
And after we understand that, you know, he actually went on the BBC over in England. He went on a talk show. And one guy basically said, like, you know, Alex, you have basically uncovered the New World Order, which we know is sinister, and they'll kill anyone who gets in their way. Now, the fact that you're alive after all this time gives me 2 reasons why you're alive. Number one, they don't exist, and we know that they do. Or number two, you're in on it. And he basically had no answer for that. He basically said, well, I'm trying to call him. You know, it's just like what he said, it just didn't really fully explain why he is still alive. Because you have to understand, Alex Jones exposed, you know, the Bohemian Grove ritual. That
yeah.
was, you know, you have to understand, like, that's no small case. Like, no researcher like John Todd or William Cooper and Webb, they never got live camera footage into a ritual. And the fact that he did that after he, on his radio show in 2000 on the night of Y2K, gave out some bogus information how Russia was loading up the bombers. Like, he basically said on his radio show how World War III was starting and had no actual evidence for it at all, so he had to make up his name again. And so anyone who does their research knows about this guy. His dad and his grandfather are high-degree Freemasons, and he says he just snuck into the Grove. But you know the Grove security. You don't just sneak into the Grove. You are fully, like, you are let in. And he got the entire ritual to kind of prove his, you know, that he's legitimate. And William Cooper, who did 17 years in the Pentagon, he said that, he went on Alex Jones' show one time, and he said that Alex Jones is just a military-style textbook disinformation agent, that he's just textbook. He's like a CIA manual expose, just explaining a disinformation agent. Alex Brooks is just textbook, because what he does is that he gives you a half-truth, and the truth that he does give you, it's trying to make you look in a different direction than when you should be looking over in this direction. You know, it's just, it's very, and after I went on that show, like, I realized that, you know, we have to be careful about who we talk to about this, because ever since I went on that show, every time my laptop clicks on a different server, or my phone clicks on a different Wi-Fi connection, I get that little black screen on my laptop, and I get a glitch on my phone. And this one guy I knew back in Seattle who was really good at computers said, yeah, dude, that's someone's just tracking your shit, dude. Like, someone's just watching you. Hmm. And that really alarmed the shit out of me, because then I did some research and I realized how other members, like my personal mentor, Fritz Springmeier, he's a very close friend of mine, he said the same thing. He goes, oh, yeah, ever since I went on Alex Jones, all my tabs. It's just like...
That's strange.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's, you know, Trump has gone on the show, you know, the lead singer of Korn, Jonathan Davis, and then Billy Corgan from Smashing Pumpkins. He's had a few prime ministers. Like, he's had some, you know, some pretty influential people on that show. And the fact that that's what happens to your software after you become a guest on his radio or show program, it's just, that's a very eye-opening experience.
That is a bit strange.
It's very strange. And what really kind of creeps me out is that the very first interview I ever did just happened to come across that kind of a situation. It's just like, well, there you go. That's what you get.
Jeez. Yeah, you mentioned that Todd character. What do you think about that? I've looked into that a little bit, but I haven't. I guess I've looked into it as much as you can by looking on the internet.
Well, I think that'd be a good topic for another interview, because this definitely won't be our last.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. I feel you. I know it's getting later.
Every radio interview I do it for 2 hours because
that's
the perfect amount of time. Yeah. That's like the time that I got to get used to doing these shows, because that's what happens on Coast to Coast and InfoWars and all those big shows. They give you a 2 hour slot, and that's why I like to structure my entire outline and my presentation around. So that will definitely be for another radio interview. And
I feel you. Thank you.
This will definitely, like, what we should really do is turn this into a monthly thing. Just every month, let's just report on what the research is, because I'm always reading. I'm always reading books, and I would love to every month come on your program and just give you a monthly update about the research that I'm currently doing.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to do this again. It's been quite informative, for sure.
Yeah, man. So if you want to get together again, I'd be very pleased to do that, because there's so much information. And when we realize that it can be done, like, we can know enough to actually, you know, tell the people that we got a legitimate case here, you know, it really wakes people up to the fact that we don't have to live this way anymore. Like, people need, like, just to give you a small example, like, if people do their research, they would know that every American in the private sector of business does not have to file a 1040 and pay income tax. That's proven. That's been proven in repeated Supreme Court cases. Just simply Google that. They have Doyle versus Mitchell. They have just a list of all these court cases of the Supreme Court where people prove that the income tax is a third form of taxation and it is on a portion to what the Constitution demands. And you understand, like, just that little piece of research, you realize, not only, you know, we're just not only getting ripped off, but they're actually putting us in jail for a law that doesn't even exist.
It's insane.
This is what we're dealing with. You know, this is the level of treachery and the level of deception that we're dealing with. They're not going to tell you your rights. The IRS is not going to tell you. They have all the information out there for you to read for yourself, but they're not going to sit there and hold your hand and walk you through the IRS code. If you don't know the code, that's on you. You got to hire a tax lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
But every tax lawyer in the world knows that there is no such thing as a law federally or in the IRS tax code book that says an American in the private sector of business has to file a 1040. End of argument. You can't deny it. You can't. It's go ahead and try it. You'll be shot.
Jeez. Well, how can everyone support you and find out more information about your research and everything? How can they pull that off?
Well, just simply just go to the Abraham Project on Facebook. I'm trying to build up my Instagram right now, but until I have, you know, just go Joshua Abraham at 007 on Instagram. And basically, like, I post, like, all the books you're supposed, that you can read, all the YouTube video documentaries that will lead you in a certain direction. I'm giving out the information to start anybody who looks at my page for the first time, that they can just simply scroll down through my posts and basically get a very easily general idea of the books that you're supposed to read. And I lay them out, I give out the information, and I lay out, you know, the films that have been put together by amazing researchers online. Mm-hmm. For free. Like, you'd be surprised how many incredibly intelligent people, you know, even in Ben Stein from Fox News, put out a free documentary on YouTube about the debate between intelligent design and spontaneous creation science.
I've heard that, yeah. No intelligence allowed. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and it's just, it's wonderful, because when you understand that part of the conspiracy, which it is a very big part, the whole theory of evolution in our schools today is a very integral part of this whole satanic ideology.
Yeah, that's definitely something close to home. I got to talk about that when we talk again, man. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a whole nother show entirely, but what we need to understand is that when you know Charles Darwin's theory from his book, Origin of the Species, you understand that his theory of evolution is not actually a scientific theory. That's actually a religious philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you understand on that line how it's not even science, it's a religion, right there with Scientology, I would put it the closest to as astronomically dumbass and stupid as Scientology. Like, the theory of evolution takes a lot more faith to believe in that than it does Christianity.
That's the truth.
But thank you very much for having me on my program, and we'll be talking soon in the future. And thank you again, Joshua. The Abraham Project on Facebook is a great place to start. And thank you for your support, and thank you for letting me come on your show.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Joshua Abraham, for being with us in the Anomic Age. As I close every program, you can't do everything, but you can most definitely do something. So check out Joshua's work. Check out all of his links. I'm sure he's got a great bibliography for you to get your research started and get you on the right track. So until next time, thanks for joining us in the Anomic Age, and we'll be seeing you next week with another program. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age Project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to AnomicAge.com. That's AnomicAge.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm gonna go get some more money.